Ha! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Country Music Edition of On The Mic. You know what? If you don't like country music, this is worth listening to because Amber Lawrence's story is amazing. She was working as an accountant, learning to play the guitar, loved a little bit of country music, although I wouldn't call her music completely country music. It's a little bit folk music. So leaning in girl version of Matchbox 20 territory. I love her stuff. And she's even released a successful kids album. She won the Country Music Golden Guitar. I'll let her tell the story. I don't want to give it all away. But Amber Lawrence is coming up very, very shortly. Australia's country music queen. Actually, I should say queen. She's too young. Country music sweetheart. Sorry, Amber. Love you. If you'd like to help get this podcast made, please go to patreon.com/onthemic. patreon.com/onthemic. Make a cheeky donation once a month to help make it happen. Sometimes I get help from a couple of producers and editors. So if you can chip in a few bucks so I can pay them and for the hosting and all that kind of stuff, that would be amazing. And I will keep cranking them out. patreon.com/onthemic. You may or may not know that I am the courtside announcer at the Sydney Kings games at Kudos Bank Arena. The season is about to start, and one of the biggest announcements ever to be made in the history of the Australian NBL has just been made. The NBA has announced that it has chosen some of their teams to take on the NBL in their preseason in October. This is the first time NBL teams will travel to the US to play against NBA teams. The Sydney Kings are taking on Utah Jazz. We have Oklahoma City taking on Melbourne United, and the Brisbane Bullets will be taking on the Phoenix Suns in Phoenix October 13. So the reason why this is happening, because there were a record 8 Australian players on the 2016-17 opening night NBA rosters, including Inglis and Patty Mills from the San Antonio Spurs, both of whom previously played in the NBL. So this is going to be absolutely massive. Get your tickets now for the Sydney Kings games, the first game beginning of October. Go to sydneykings.com.au, and for the first time, we are having the VIP celebrity courtside seats. Yeah, just like the ones where you see Jack Nicholson or Kim Kardashian sitting in the front row. It's going to be an amazing season. The biggest screen in the Southern Hemisphere, non-stop entertainment. The best players in the competition, I reckon we've got it this year. I reckon we've got a damn good chance. Jason Kadee's back, Brad Newley, and they had a smashing time over there in the Asian basketball competition in Lebanon. They just beat China today. Jason Kadee slaying them with 20 points. Great game. He is just on fire this season. Anyway, I hope to see you there at the Sydney Kings game starting early October with those NBA games. That is awesome. Thanks to Mel, the functions manager at North Bondi Surf Life Saving Club, for having us broadcast our podcast here today. If you want to hire out this incredible function facility, the best, most amazing surf life saving club in Australia, all you got to do is go to northbondisurfclub.com and contact Melissa. She will help you out. Oh, by the way, thanks to everyone who sponsored me in the City to Surf. We raised close to $20,000 for the Shepherd Centre, giving deaf kids a voice. It was an awesome run. I ran in a full head-to-toe gold lamé outfit, holding a Facebook Live camera the whole way. Well, half the way, until some kids from a school threw a bucket of water on me and my phone and gimbal crapped itself. But a great effort from myself, I must say, and I did it in about an hour and a half. Thanks to everyone who sponsored me. Yeehaw! Here's Amber Lawrence.
Test 1, 2, check.
On the mic with Mike Goldman.
Icicles, popsicles, and test 1, 2.
Hello and welcome to On The Mic, and a very special welcome to country music superstar Amber Lawrence.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Round of applause from the studio audience of 1.
2. There's 2 of us.
Oh, thank you. Clap yourself.
Why not?
She loves a warm hand on her entrance.
Rightio.
Oh, wait a sec. Sorry. Round of applause.
Thank you.
Sounds better. How are you going?
Oh, I'm good. What a day. Hey.
We are here at Bondi Beach Surf Life Saving Club, North Bondi Beach Surf Life Saving Club. By far the best surf club in Australia. We're in the function room right now, which, because I'm a member here, I got to scan for free. But
very
I'm only
nice.
Allowed to have it at the last minute in case it's a function or something like that.
Well, it's quite early, so I'm not sure what would be having a function at this time.
But,
so, you know.
Then again, I said Amber Lawrence is coming up here, and like all the bosses downstairs. Yeah. They love you. Look, the guys that run the surf club, she's not coming in here.
No, I don't believe you. But you
You're
know
joking,
I've got a song
aren't you?
Called The Lifesaver, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and here it is.
About surf lifesavers. But I really do.
And what inspired that? Did you date one? Was your life saved?
No, it's a very poignant song about my dad, a lifesaver, who was a Maroubra, South Maroubra surf lifesaver. So I have to say, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong club right now. I should be down at Maroubra.
Traitor.
Yeah, and my dad was a lifesaver that married Miss Maroubra Beach, my mum, and he had
That's
a stroke.
That's a beautiful song. I remember that now.
Yeah.
I was at your concert where you played a few songs, I think, for a fundraiser for my dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's it's a very specific song about two people, but it reaches further in that it's a love song about people that stand by each other when life doesn't go as planned. You know, my dad was 40 and had a stroke. I mean, how young is that?
Yeah.
You know, now that we're closer to that age, you go, whoa, that's actually really young. So, and my mum stood by him, kept him as help. You know, I mean, he was disabled and he was paralysed and all of that. That comes with a stroke, but mum, you know, stood by him for 20 years. So that's the story and the lifesaver, but it, you know, it paints the picture of the Australian beach life of suntans and cigarettes and swimming cozzies and moustaches.
Hey, that's my life. That's what we're all about. We're sitting here in our cozzies right now having a fag.
Oh, God.
Right, staring out over the ocean, but... So you were ever a surf lifesaver?
Yeah.
Your dad dragged you into it?
Yeah, I did Nippers. And,
me too. I used to be at Freshie Surf Club, Collaroy, Curl Curl, and now I'm living over here around Bondi. I had to join North Bondi.
Really? Well, I'm just a one club woman, South Maroubra, all
so
the way.
Loyal.
So loyal.
What was your event? What were you good at?
Like
the flags?
I was beach sprint.
You're a beach sprinter?
Yeah.
Get out of town.
Yeah. But not as good as you. I made the semis for the Australian titles.
Really?
That's as far as I got.
Wow.
So, yeah, but no good
at flags.
We're
both beach breeders. I didn't know we had that in common.
I know.
That's awesome.
It's a very uncommon thing to have in common.
Did you have a... Because I was Australian beach sprint champion.
That's
just
amazing.
In case anyone doesn't know. I think I mentioned it four times every podcast.
Oh, God.
But it was when I was like 18. And I'm going to release something right now that I don't think I've done before. And it's a little embarrassing.
Okay.
But since we're talking about
radio.
So it was 1989, I believe, at Wollongong. It was the Australian titles.
Yeah.
And I was lining up, I don't know how, I made the final of the beach sprint, lining up there ready to start. And just before the race begun, just before the starter's gun fired, a wave washed up just over lane 8, my lane, and hardened the sand.
Oh, so that's good.
And everyone's like running in the soft sand and I'm just going straight ahead.
And that's how you won.
On the hard sand, and I was the winner, only by a fraction, but hey. That's you know, the luck of the draw.
It's in the rule book, isn't it?
It's okay.
It's fine.
A little bit of water never hurt anyone.
That's how the surf life saving titles are kind of ruled a bit more by nature than, say, the Olympics, you know?
So, yeah.
But, yeah, my surf life saving days are over. I mean, I'm away too much out in rural parts of Australia singing songs these days to be a lifesaver.
Yeah, well, I've got to actually be out there rescuing people this summer. I have to do patrols.
Got your bronze medallion now.
Well, I got my bronze medallion years ago, but because I had a break for a few years living in the States and whatever, I got to redo it.
Yeah.
So you got to do the run, swim, run and everything like
that.
It's going to hurt.
It's
going to be painful.
So the
stories is what you're all about. I mean, and that's what is... I love about country music is people tell these incredible stories. And one of the songs I'm looking forward to hearing, and it must have a great story to it, is your show you just did for Donald Trump recently.
Yeah. Boo, people say. Okay, so what happened
was... Are you a Trump fan? Are you a Trumpet? Or are you
Look, I'm non... I don't bring politics into my music. I keep my politics private.
Good.
At the moment. We'll see about
that. Until you run for Parliament.
But at the moment, I'm keeping neutral-ish in my commentary. But I was invited to sing a song for, well, to write a song, actually, to commemorate the 100-year friendship between Australia and America, which this year is 100 years since Australia and America became allies, I guess, and supported each other. And so I was asked to write a song about that, and I thought, oh, geez, it's a great time to be writing that song, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I thought, I'm going to get some flack either way, I think, when I write this song. So I made sure I researched it so that I knew what I was writing, you know, I knew what I was saying. So I wrote this song called 100 Year Handshake, and I focused on a man called Leslie Allen, and his nickname was Bull. And he was a 26-year-old Australian that in PNG in 1940s ran back into battle time after time after time and dragged out wounded American soldiers, carried them out, potentially saving their lives. And if you've seen Forrest Gump, the scene in that movie where Forrest runs back in and into the fire.
Run, Forrest.
Yeah, that's actually based on the Australian Leslie Allen.
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it is.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. So that was the centrepiece of this song that I wrote. And then I incorporated the, you know, how Australia helped America with the transmission of photos for the Apollo 11 landing. You know, we sent the photos out to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And
you put that in the song too?
Yeah, that's in the song. And then
I've got to hear it.
Yeah, well, I didn't bring my guitar. I would have played it for you. But and then another the bridge of the song is the War Brides. You know, what represents friendship between Australia and America more closely than the War Brides? You know, Australians travelling across the world to marry their American soldiers. So so I got to sing it at the USS Intrepid in New York and Hudson River in
May.
That's
great. That's always there, is it? The USS Intrepid.
Yeah.
It's like a function centre now.
It's a museum function centre.
I've been there. It's incredible.
Yeah. So it was a very high level function. You know, Donald Trump was there, as was Malcolm Turnbull. It was that meeting that they had the first time that they met. And it was just quite surreal, really. You know, the security and the Secret Service. But funnily enough, once we got into the function room and everyone was in, it just felt like, you know, a Year 12 formal, really. Mm. You know, it was no more fancy than anything. You know, like the bread roll was there and the butter and the wine was probably your, you know, medium-priced wine.
And did you get to meet Trump?
No, I didn't. I sang the song and he was, you know, the table was right in front of where I sang, and the room of 800 people was silent while I sang it acoustically. And, you know, that was amazing and definitely the biggest thing I've done in my career.
What an incredible moment in your career.
Yeah, it totally was. And it was a long night, actually. So by the time it finished... Mm. Donald Trump and Malcolm Turnbull were basically ushered out by security immediately. And so there was no opportunity to get that photo that, you know, would have sent my Instagram followers either south or north.
Were
I don't know which way.
Were you freaking out beforehand? Like on the plane going over, I'm going to do a show for Donald Trump, the most powerful man in the universe and star of The Apprentice.
And,
you know, the Prime Minister of Australia, you've probably done a million times before.
Yeah, I have met.
But were you freaking out just before you had to get up there and do the song? Or trying to remember the words?
No, I'd practiced enough. But I wasn't freaking out because it was, you know, such a kind of thing that you thought at any moment this could be cancelled. You know, I thought at any moment someone's going to whisper in my ear and go, look, we've run out of time, you're not singing the song, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I was just kind of going with the flow or you know, again, Donald Trump's not coming. You know, there was all these rumours and there was big protests out in the streets of New York.
Well, he cancelled the meeting only a few hours before with Malcolm Turnbull, and it was all Australian press are like, oh, Donald Trump doesn't care about Australia. But then he went to the dinner and he sat next to Malcolm Turnbull all night, and they probably nutted out policies for the next 10 years.
I think so. Well, lots of Australian businessmen were there declaring investment and all that kind of stuff.
There was Frank Lowe was there, I believe.
Pratt was there.
And Rupert Murdoch. Got up and did a speech.
Yes.
Did you get to meet any of them?
Yeah, I met a lot of them. I met everyone there except for Donald Trump and
Malcolm What about Rupee Baby? How's Rupert Murdoch?
No, I didn't meet Rupert.
He's in and out.
Met a few of them.
I did see his presentation, and because he got up and did a big thing about Australia and you know how we have a great relationship over the years, and I thought that was really good. It made me feel proud to be an Australian seeing him get up and do that.
I mean, the whole night was a really nice night as an Australian. Definitely the love in the room kind of swayed more towards the Australians. So, I mean, the nerves and everything just weren't... They didn't get a chance to come into play because we didn't know when we were going to be singing either. Like, the program just kept changing throughout the night. So, so I was just kind of sitting there going... Well, there's the wine for when I finish. Don't touch it. Don't sip that yet. Don't eat too much. Sit up straight. Don't ruin your dress.
Have you ever done a show drunk?
No.
A tipsy?
Oh, yeah, I have tipsy. I've had one or two wines, definitely.
Oh, I've made a career out of it.
But, look, I do find that the shows are better when I'm sober, so I try to keep it that way.
Yeah, well, I think that they're better when I'm drunk, but apparently they're not.
They feel more fun, but they... The audience doesn't seem to connect in the same way. I mean, I love... That's the weird thing about music is that you get a rider, you know. It's pretty much the only job where not only are you allowed to drink at work, because, you know, you can't drink in any other workplace. You can't drink on a building site. You can't drink, you know, when I worked at Qantas, you weren't allowed to drink at work. But there you go. You get a job as a musician. Yeah. You're not only allowed to drink, but contractually they have to give you the alcohol. Mm. You know, if they don't, they've breached the contract. So
your career, that's obviously one of the biggest shows ever. You've won a Golden Guitar, which is the biggest award you can win in Australia. In country music, and you've toured all over the world and played incredible shows, released albums. You've even done a kids album. But before you got into country music, it wasn't so long ago. Was it like 10 years?
Well, it's 10 years now.
Ten years. So before that, you mentioned you worked for Qantas, and I think you worked in a bank.
No, I was an accountant at Qantas.
An accountant at Qantas. Put the two together. And so you were writing songs back then and just sending them out on CD to people and try to get an opinion.
No, I was. I never wanted to be a singer. Growing up, that wasn't, you know, part of my plan. I went to uni, I became a chartered accountant. You know, I've still got a lump on my finger from how much I studied, you know, with the pen.
But could you always play guitar?
No, I didn't start playing guitar till I was 23, and and then started writing songs, and that was already a few years into my business career. And then started writing songs, and that's when I started realizing, oh, okay, music is something that actually I'm really enjoying. So then I started going to songwriter nights and a few talent quests, and it was kind of, even though it seems like a slow trip, this music, it was actually kind of a quick start, you know, from learning guitar to getting gigs was about a year, and then a talent quest that opened up doors to recording my first album. And so that's 10 years ago.
Yeah, and so you were sending them out. Who's the first person that gave you your break?
Well, the first person that played my music on radio was your dad.
Oh, Grant Goldman.
Yes.
That was a nice little setup I did there for the question and answer.
You're lucky that I knew the answer.
Gave dad a nice little plug.
No, that was exciting. I was in my office at Qantas, and, you know, then I got the phone call from 2SM that they were going to play my song, and, you know, I was like, oh my God, jumping around the office. And then I had to ask for permission to go to the station the next day to do a radio interview, you know, in work hours. So everyone at work listened.
They were cool?
Yeah, they listened to the interview, you know, they turned the wireless on.
Are you freaking out? Were you nervous? Getting on radio for the first time, getting interviewed, then people playing your song?
Definitely.
People ring up and say they liked it?
Still nervous on radio sometimes, you know, when you know say you tell, I don't know, someone important that you'll be on the show and you know they're listening, you get this little, I don't know, nerve when you think other people are listening out there. So.
Oh, you must have been freaking out before this podcast.
I know, exactly.
Oh, no, what am I going to say? What am I going to do?
I'm worried about now.
We're family now. You must be relaxed with me.
Yeah, I'm cool.
We're like brother and sister because Dad discovered you.
The beach sprinters,
brother and sister. We've even played a show together.
Oh, I know. It's too much.
Was that probably a highlight of your career, playing as support to Dusty Plains?
Singleton Coal Festival. That was the first gig I took my boyfriend to. We've been together just under 2 years, and so, you know, he hadn't seen any shows, and I took him to the Singleton Coal Festival.
Oh, no, what a way to start.
Well, it was great, but it was 40 degrees. That was the problem. It was so hot, and I had a 90-minute set to do, all right? And I was in the full blazing sun, and when I came off stage, I had, like, encrusted salt all over me. Like,
you wouldn't have known it. You were having fun up there, smiling and having a laugh. You're such a performer.
I dehydrated myself in that 90 minutes that I got into the car, and I'm like, oh, my God.
I have to apologise for that show. It's my fault.
Yeah.
Because I think I set you up for that.
How?
I set you up for the fall.
What?
Because a friend of mine was putting together that whole festival because he runs a magazine in Singleton called Coalface. It's like a coal mining magazine. Yep. And the guys who were in charge of the actual festival had a falling out, and at the last minute, like the last month, they didn't promote it. They didn't put posters anywhere.
Okay. Right.
So you've got the Golden Guitar winner up there on stage, the superstar, and I was like, it's hardly anyone there. And I went along as well because I've written like one country music song in my whole life, and just for a laugh, I thought I'm going to get up and play a few songs with the band,
These
George Sitch's band.
Okay.
I had the best one ever. I was like screaming at all the four people that were there when I was on. And you go, hello, Singleton. Great to see you. May have heard this song on the radio. My name is Dusty Plains. And they're the best band. I mean, George Sitch's band. They're all professional musos. That was the beginning and the end of my country music career.
Well, it was a tough day. It was just a little bit too hot.
What's your favourite place to play in Australia? Because you would have played a lot of venues.
Yeah, heaps. I'm about to go to Gympie Muster. That's always
huge.
Good fun.
My mum's a massive country music fan.
Yeah, yeah.
She used to run the Keith Urban Fan Club.
Oh, my gosh.
She used to host a country music show on Briz 31 in Brisbane.
Really? She's a fan.
A TV show.
Wow.
Like, you don't understand how massive
fan. You're a media child, aren't you?
That mum is. Yeah. You know, my mum was a weather girl on Channel 7 and Channel O.
Yeah.
Erica. I know she's listening. She listens to every podcast.
Oh, hi, Erica.
She shares it on her Facebook.
Oh, that's adorable.
She'll help run your fan club too, if you like.
My mum shares stuff of mine on Facebook too, and sometimes she accidentally shares stuff I don't think she was meant to share, stuff that's, you know, a little bit pushes the boundaries of, like, political correctness.
What's bad is when mum or dad get on and they correct you and you're like, oh, you've got a spelling error there.
Oh, no.
I didn't bring you up like that.
Really? No, that doesn't happen. I know how to spell your and your.
Your spelling is good and you're accounting because you're an accountant.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Hey, so tell us about this new song that you've just done with a young man who won all of the awards at the Country Music Festival
Travis Collins. Yeah, we've done a little side project this year. So I had an album come out last year, Happy Ever After. And so that's had three singles out, which they went really well. And time now to dabble, I guess, in time to dabble in something fun. And Travis is someone I've known and worked with for since I began in this music business.
And you wrote a song about Australia.
Well, we did. I went to Silverton in Feb and went to the Silverton Hotel to play some songs and checked out the sunset. And as you do, because there's nothing like a Silverton sunset. Have you seen a Silverton sunset?
No, I haven't. Please describe to me the Silverton sunset.
Well, it's epic, you know, because you can see it for miles, and the colours due to the, you know, the sands and the landscape are just so golden and bright. And you know that there are artists that just kind of move to Silverton, Broken Hill area purely for the sunsets, and just that's what they do. Yeah, so I came back, and the next day when I got home from Silverton, I had a songwriting session with Travis for this project that we'd agreed to do. And so I said to Travis when I got home and we were writing for this project, I actually just said the words, "Have you seen a Silverton sunset?" And we just got talking about all the different parts of Australia we've seen through our jobs. And and in the song, we compare it to all the parts of the world that we've seen, and, you know, they're great too. But like we say in the song, there's nothing like a Silverton sunset. There's nothing like a Byron sunrise. And talk about Uluru and the Manly ferry ride. And,
that reminded me of that song by James Rain, Aussie Crawl.
Yeah.
As the Manly ferry makes its way to Circular Quay.
Yeah, yeah.
Be So Reckless. And that sort of gave me that kind of vibe. But you really did capture the heart of Australia in that song.
Thank you. Yeah, we're getting a great response and people are loving it and sharing it. And just, I guess we made a fan video as well with all pictures from around Australia. And it was incredible to see these backyard shots that, you know, all the fans had taken of their piece of paradise, and from beaches to farms to rivers, you know, to outback roads and trucks and all of that. So, yeah, it's on my Facebook
page. There's not enough songs about Australia. We've got I Still Call Australia Home.
You know,
that Reckless is sort of like an Australia song, and This Is Australia, Ganga Jang.
Yeah. I think
Still Call Australia Home.
They're not being written as much recently, but I mean, in this last year, the three singles I've released or have written, My Big Mac Truck, which is from the kids' album.
Love it.
Says, "Watch Australia through the windscreen." And then we've got the 100-year handshake, which says, "The Aussies and the Yanks." And then we've got Our Backyard. I don't know if we say Australia in that song, though. I'm not sure. But it's become...
Catch the vibe.
Yeah.
It's what you're on about.
The last three songs I've kind of written talk about Australia, so I feel there's a pattern emerging for me. And it's hard to write about Australia without sounding corny sometimes. I think that's why you don't do it. It doesn't sound corny at all. No, we're so happy with this song. I think if you write it from the right place, like we didn't say, okay, for this project we're doing together, well, let's start by writing a song about Australia. No, that didn't happen. We sat down and went... Have you got any ideas? No, have you? Oh, I've got two words, Silverton sunset. What do you think?
Let's have a few beers and talk about it.
Yeah, we did. We had a few coffees, actually. We procrastinated for a long time, and then finally, good songs take a while.
You guys done it live yet?
Yeah, we have. It's been incredible. Yeah, and there's a lot of words in the chorus too, so it's really funny to watch people. They know the song, but they don't really know every single word, so they're kind of doing that mouthing thing of like, what's the next word? And then they get to the Our Backyard. That's the bit they know.
It must be funny when you're watching people in the crowd and they're screaming and carry on like they're fans, but their mouths just move.
Yeah.
They don't really know the words.
Yeah, I love that. That anyone who's at the concert, they can sing along however they like. It's okay.
So from Australia to Nashville, tell us about your experience in Nashville, because that's the country music capital of the world, pretty much. I mean, I've got friends who are going, have gone over there to live, to try and get a following in America, because it's the biggest country music market in the world.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's the reason why we've got such a big influence with country music in Australia, when you hear a bit of the American twang in some Aussie country artists. And they all tend to go there. What's your vibe with Nashville?
Great. I love it. I go there nearly every year for a couple of weeks, and didn't go this year. It's inspiring, you know. It's non-stop. You can always find live music to go and watch, no matter what time of day, no matter when. And you can always find someone to collaborate with.
Yeah.
You can find someone to you know, just make you better as a musician. And that's what I love about it. And, you know, Australia is just smaller, so it's harder to do that on an everyday scale. So that's what's great about Nashville. And in the population, you know, if you can crack it in Nashville, you can make a big career out of it. Australia is so much smaller that, yes, you can make a career, but you've got to diversify a little bit, you know, like kids' albums and that kind of stuff too. Yeah. I think that's just my opinion. But look, I'm not going to move to Nashville to pursue the dream. I've already pursued the dream here for 10 years and, you know, I don't think I can go to America and stuff from scratch, do it again. But I'll still be going back and forth.
In my opinion, you should. The more you go over there, the better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And like, you're such an incredible talent. You're by far, I reckon, the best female country music singer in Australia.
Oh,
and like, I listen to your stuff and I don't think country music when I listen to it, because, I mean, my dad's always harping on about it because he's like won all these awards for promoting country music in Australia and all over the world. And I listen to yours and I don't feel like I'm listening to a country music album, because you don't have that y'all thing kind of thing to it like some country music artists have.
Yeah, I keep it Aussie, I suppose.
Yeah, what do you think of the Australian country music artists when they really put on the American accent? Does that annoy you?
It doesn't. You know, each to their own, I guess. Whatever works for you. It's hard to better just to concentrate.
Did you
on
ever
your
think
own.
I might put a bit of a Yankee thing into this to
well,
try?
Well, sometimes you can't help it. Sometimes I mean, there are certain words that you do sound funny saying them with an Australian accent. Yeah. You have to kind of round them off with the American accent. But again, with these songs I've been writing lately, I have to sing, and you know, my accent is Australian. Mm. You know, I don't. It's not even Sydney accent now. It's kind of like, where did I grow up? I don't know.
Because if you put it on, the Yanks can pick it. They go, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
She's Australian. She's putting it on.
Well, that's not what she really sounds like. You. I have to put an accent on when I go there because no one can understand me. Like, order a coffee. What's your name? Amber. What?
Amber? What? Amber?
No, they don't get that far. I go, Amber. They go, Amber. Yeah.
I find it's easier if you talk an American accent.
Well, that's what I do. I order a coffee and I go, Amber.
Especially in LA, because the Mexicans have no idea what you're talking about when you're speaking an American, an Australian accent. You have to speak an American accent to order a burrito or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Can I have a burrito, mate? And they're like, what you say, senor?
Yeah.
No, I'd like a burrito, please. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. I agree. You have to put the accent on when you're ordering food.
Did you have any big-time US country music artists see you play when you're in Nashville, or anyone come up to you, any producers?
No.
Because that's how it happens for a lot of Australians over there.
Well, I didn't go over in that context. I went over to record and write the album, so you're not really putting yourself in front of... You're only putting yourself in front of... specific people. So, you know, I worked with great musicians that, you know, like Fred Elteringham, who's Sheryl Crow's drummer, and Katie Lang's drummer, Dixie Chicks drummer. And, yeah, you know, he said lovely things and, you know,
you learn anything from them?
Well, I mean, I didn't learn anything from a drummer, really. But,
but you know, like they might say about the industry, you
definitely,
know.
Definitely.
You got to call this person, call that person. They push you in the right direction.
They're extremely helpful. You know, everyone's happy to share information and pass on contacts. So I think that the last time I was there, I was recording my album. And, yeah, that was great. And to be in a high-level studio with a Grammy Award-winning engineer, top class musicians, and knowing that you're cutting it too, you know, you're up there. Your music is good enough to be doing that. That's really cool.
How good's Keith Urban?
He's amazing.
He's nailed it, hasn't he?
I know.
You ever worked with Keith?
No, I haven't.
Met him?
No. I haven't. I will, though, I'm sure. I'm sure I'll pass.
When my mum ran his fan club years ago, he did a little showcase in Brisbane. This is before he cracked the big time. And I was always fighting the country music thing because Dad loved country music. Yeah. Mum loved it.
Yeah.
So I rocked up in this leather jacket with tassels like that could touch the ground. And a massive cowboy hat, huge cowboy boots.
Oh, my God.
And no one was dressed like that,
you're
that there except me.
You're such a terrible son.
And Keith was like, oh, you're good, mate. It must be someone from Gympie. Hey, how you doing? Totally
Keith's
embarrassed.
Really good, though. I think he still remembers all those people that helped him in his career early on.
Well, I worked with him on The Voice because I was doing some voiceover stuff and behind-the-scenes work. And he's like, I introduced myself and he said, yeah, you're that prick that showed up on my show in Britain. No, he didn't say that. I said, oh, you're my mum's, Erica, who used to help out with your fan club. He's friends with his parents.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I love Erica. How is
she?
It was really cool. He's in Australia at the moment, actually. Matt Hollywood, my magician friend. You might have done the old corporate gig with him. He has a show on the Gold Coast at the Illusions Theatre at Sanctuary Cove. Nicole Kidman rocked up on Saturday night.
Really?
Yeah, but her and her security guard said, you know, please don't tell anyone. Okay. You know, I want to keep it on the down low. Yeah. He showed me a photo on his phone the other day. But, yeah, this podcast is probably going to come out for a few days.
So that's fine.
But, how cool that she's just rocked up to his show like that.
Yeah.
But Keith's amazing. Really love Keith.
It's inspiring what he's done. It's inspiring, absolutely. And, you know, paved the way for Aussies to say it can be done if you've got insane amount of talent and an insane amount of drive and never give up.
You've got to play a lot of shows. America's a big place.
Yeah. Well, a big place. I mean, Australia's a big place too. The amount of places you've got to go to in this country.
I interviewed Gene Simmons years ago and he was talking about Cold Chisel and how he thinks that they're the best Australian band he's ever heard other than AC/DC. And he seemed to think that they would have been massive in America if they just had made the decision to tour there earlier and really pushed it because, like, In Excess went there for years and years and years and just kept hammering it out.
Yeah.
And you know, now in this day and age, it's probably, if you're a great talent, you've got an awesome song, it can be easier in a lot of ways because of the internet to get your stuff out there. If you get on a show, like it'd be a soundtrack in a movie or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. All those things.
You got any
matter.
Of those groovy things coming
few,
up?
Superhero, my song was has been in a few things like the Firefighters campaign and we're just waiting for tourism to call us for our backyard, you know. We're pretty sure it'd be a good song. So
that could be good.
I think it'd be perfect for them.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So your golden guitar. Mm-hmm. I've got to talk about that for a sec because that is the pièce de résistance.
Yeah.
The most amazing award that you can win in Australian country music. Yeah. And you got it.
I did, yes.
That's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, it was great on the night. I didn't think I'd win it, to be honest, although the signs, and I've never had signs before, you know, I've been nominated four times before that. And, you know, then on the day of the awards, my phone started ringing, you know, oh, it's Sydney Morning Herald. Just in case you win tonight, can we get a quote? And then the phone would ring, Daily Telegraph. Just in case you win, can we get a photo? Okay,
yeah,
sure.
You've won.
So, I had like these little, that's weird. Okay, but don't get too excited.
Did you write a speech?
Come on, thought
you
about
did,
it. No, I've written ones before. Like, I do like reverse psychology. Okay, I'll write a speech so that means I will win, or I won't write a speech because that means I will win, you know, that kind of stuff.
You're a bit hard on yourself, are you?
Yeah, you don't want to get too high expectations in this game. But anyway, so I won it, and it was cool, and it made a big difference. You know, people like to be, you know, the general population like to be told who they should think is good. You know what I mean? Like, so that's, you know, been great for my career.
You say should think is good. You are good.
Well, yeah. But what I mean is, until you win that award, there's a lot of people that don't give you the time of day until someone else has said, stamp of approval. Do you know what I mean? And then the bigger numbers start.
Was that a final stamp of approval for you? Did you need that at all, or do you think that your confidence was good enough to just keep going?
Oh no, I was fine to keep going. I mean, I know that awards are just timing and luck and all of that, you know. But I was lucky that year. You know, I had the song that could do it. You know, that's Superhero was the song, and that's kind of what it takes. Everything to align, as well as a song that kind of has resonated enough to win an award.
The big hit.
Yeah. So
I'm sure you got plenty more hits to come.
Oh, definitely. I believe that too. And you know, I've only just begun.
You know Dad will keep playing them.
Yeah, that's right.
Keep pumping them out.
Exactly.
On his 27 stations across Australia. Yeah. Does that help you get people to shows?
Of course. Yeah.
Help you sell the records? You don't really sell records anymore. It's downloads.
Well, it's still enjoyable selling the records at the end of the night. I do like that.
That's a good little cash cow, isn't it? I hope the tax man isn't listening. Oh, how many T-shirts did we sell?
None.
How many CDs? Awesome.
Stubby coolers are good. Yeah. What else have we got?
How has it changed? Have you got a lot of other
Not at the moment,
products?
But
you got
I have.
Amber Lawrence pens?
No,
Amber Lawrence
teddy
hair
bears,
clips? Teddy bears?
Stuffed toys? Teddy bears?
Because you did the kids' album.
Yeah, but the teddy bears were, you know, mostly grown men by them.
Amber, can you put some of your perfume on this teddy bear, please?
I know.
I'd just like to take it home and listen
calendars,
to your music.
Calendars, I've had calendars. They're good. Good sellers.
The Amber Lawrence calendar.
Yeah, you can have me on your wall for the whole year.
Any bikini shots?
No way. Oh, God. They'd want a refund.
I don't think so. So how's the music industry changed for you and country music and the money that you make with things like iTunes and Spotify and Tidal and all these different apps where you listen to your music now? Because like this morning I was listening to 3 on iTunes Music.
Yeah.
I can just say, hey, Siri, play Amber Lawrence. And I'll play it straight away.
Amazing.
And I'm listening to all your songs. And,
amazing.
I mean, and you're getting like 0.1% per
it
track.
Has,
is it worse?
It has made a difference financially and in a worse way, for sure. Yeah, I mean, even before when we went digital to iTunes, if you had to buy an album, it was $16. So the artist would generally get about half of that.
Yeah.
That's $8. That's still okay, you know.
Yeah.
Now, as a user, I love it, of course. Yeah. Great, I can listen to anything I want at any time for like 1 cent, you know. As a musician, oh, damn it, you just listened to my album and I pretty much got nothing for it.
Yeah, something you've slogged your guts out for years.
Yeah, and you know, even like best friends might go, oh, I listened to your album, I really love it, and I listened to it on Spotify. I'm like, oh, why don't you just give me $20?
Buy it, bitch.
Come on, give me $20. So,
I'll sign it for you, goddammit.
Yeah, you just have to find different ways to make money and... And so, you know, touring's important, selling tickets is important.
I think there should be some sort of campaign in the Australian music industry, and APRA, the Australian Performing Rights Association, they've got a lot to answer for because they make a lot of money out of Australian artists because they collect all the money. Mm. It's an organisation run by lawyers. I mean, you probably won't bag them as much as I will because, I mean, I'm not a musician, but I've worked on radio and I know how much money the radio stations pay to APRA. I worked in the corporate world and a lot of businesses. Even this venue, like North Bondi Surf Club, would pay a lot of money to APRA every year. And I think that they need to step it up and they need to do campaigns, like for Australian music especially, to say, you know, buy the album online, you know, buy the concert tickets, buy the T-shirt, support the artists. Mm. I don't think we see enough of that in Australia. I mean, you make money when you have concerts and stuff like that, but APRA make a lot of money, and if anything, their money's gone up since all of the Spotify and all of that kind of stuff has happened. So they need to not give themselves pay rises and start, you know, promoting the artists and people buying the actual album.
I think a lot of young people don't realize the economics of music, and they think music is free, but the reality is, I was at the physio a couple of weeks ago, and the physio said, oh, I just don't pay for music, I just play it. Why should I? Well, because that gives ambience to your business, which means a customer's possibly slightly has a more enjoyable experience, you know? So that is a product that you're using to make your business better. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. And if people just keep stop paying for it, it's a bit far-fetched that music will stop. But you know, really...
If it's a shit song in the shop, I'm not going to buy anything.
How can anyone make music if eventually we just don't get paid for it?
Yeah.
That's kind of what's happening. So,
what do we do? Like, how can we look after the upcoming artists a little bit more? Is it like government funding or something like that?
No, I mean, I think it's survival of the fittest as well, you know. Like, there's always been... Music's a passion, so people will do it whether they're good or bad. So, you know, and the bad music's been kind of given a padding, maybe. Mm. So there's got to be survival of the fittest for some of it. And then I like education would be great to let people know that, you know, music's not free.
Mm.
Pay for it a little bit.
Just chip in. Help the artist. Hey, so when's your next show's coming out? You got the Gympie Muster.
I've got Saturday night in a little town called Gresford.
I better hurry up and put this podcast out so we can say Saturday night.
If you miss that, then the next Saturday night's Gympie Muster. Well, Friday night, actually.
Definitely be up before then.
Gympie Muster. And then I'm off on a big trip riding and... all that kind of stuff.
Are you writing by yourself or you go to work with writing groups?
Because
a lot of musicians, they team up, and especially if they're under the same record label, they have these music writers writing camps.
Yeah, I go to those all the time.
Yeah, cool. So who are you going to with this camp? And who have you written with that we might have known about?
I wouldn't know the names of the people I've written with, really. They're songwriters, you know. Mm. Like, I haven't written with famous artists necessarily, just great songwriters.
And people who've written songs for famous artists.
Yeah, exactly. So
people can make a massive career out of that, make a lot of money.
Yeah, totally. But again, that's disintegrating as the music business is, anyway, doom and gloom. But yeah, in a month's time, I'll have a whole bunch of new songs and... And then,
and if you need some accounting done, AmberLawrenceAccounting.com.
Exactly. No, people have emailed me. Fans have emailed and said, could you do my tax? And
can you do my bookkeeping?
No, things I don't like doing anymore. Bookkeeping for other people.
Stop that.
What else? Spreadsheets. No, I like keeping tabs of my show income. That's
good. Do you do your own accounting?
Oh, a bit, kind of. I send my own invoices. But, you know, I say it's like doctors that smoke. They know they shouldn't. I'm like an accountant that spends money where I shouldn't. So, you know. You know the principles, but I don't adhere to them.
Oh, I hate accounting. Yeah. It is just the worst thing for me. And I'm so hopeless at it.
Yeah.
I got a bookkeeper and an accountant and a lady who runs my Airbnb.
Oh, wow.
And they all hate me because they ring me and say, what's this transaction for? What's that for?
I would. I'd hate you too.
And it's like, and now they give me this stupid app where I have to take photos of my receipts.
Shit. Oh, that
and
is
send
not
it to them.
Time consuming at all, is it? All day long.
Such a pain
Bloody
in the
hell.
Ass. I mean, I don't know if I'm saving any money or if it's going to make that much of a difference. Who cares?
Yeah, just make it up. No, sorry, I didn't say that.
So Gympie Muster. And if people want to go and see you or want to find out where you're playing.
Yeah, so nothing in September because I'll be overseas. But October, quite a few shows, and AmberLawrence.com is my website. Amber Lawrence.
AmberLawrence.com. How is your American accent? Let's hear your American accent, Amber.
No, no.
Let's ask the next question. I'd like you to answer in American accent.
Okay, sure.
Okay? So tell me, you're in a relationship right now, and you've been with this young man for quite some time.
Yeah.
Are you planning any marriage or writing any songs about him?
I have written just one song about him. See, I can only do a southern accent.
Okay, we're going southern. I was trying to do Californian.
No, I can only do southern.
Okay, let me ask the question again. When are you getting married?
We are already married because we cannot live in sin. In the
southern I didn't know park. You got married.
No, I'm not married.
Okay. You tricked me.
We are probably getting married one day. I don't know.
You ain't no engaged yet?
I mean, it's not my job to ask him to marry me, and I'll just wait.
Do you want to get married and have babies?
One of those things, one or two of those things.
You
want to
ruin your life?
Sure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, you know, okay, so that was a really bad accent, but look, I did my best. I used to be better at it, but I've lost that.
Can you do any other accents?
No, I can't, actually. I can do a bit.
Come on, everyone, do an English accent. That's not too hard.
That's true. I can do that.
We've gone completely off track here in this interview.
I can do English. And,
English, that's nice.
Yeah, I'm not so bad at that.
Here we are on the BBC. I've got a beautiful little
To do the most obvious of all the accents, you know, like if it's English, it's like this one. If it's American, it's Southern.
Do we
get
a lot of English country music singers?
No.
I don't hear a lot of them.
A couple, just a couple.
I don't know of any. Oh, you got the cause.
I'm wrapping this interview up. I'm out of here.
The cause is a little
they're
bit...
They're not English. They're
Irish.
They're Irish,
but it's the same sort
they're
of
They're Irish.
Area.
I don't That's think they'd like to be called English.
Probably as good as you get.
And there's a few, actually. I interviewed, because I have a radio show myself, I Heart Country Australia. And,
get out. I didn't even know.
Yeah, true.
I didn't see that on Twitter.
Yeah, that's true. So I interviewed some of the English acts. There's two at the moment, Ward Thomas and The Shires.
Oh, cool.
Yes. Hertfordshire.
Nice. I saw a band the other night called All Our Exes Live in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
They were great.
They were good.
I think they talked more than they played songs.
Oh, God, really? Yeah.
But the crowd loved them. And the audience were anything from 15-year-old kids to 70-year-old women.
That's amazing. Where were they?
They were playing in Newtown. can't remember the name of the venue, but they're great.
Yeah, they're really lots of fun. Good. Yeah.
A mate of mine, Kai Brown, he does this cowboy chain stitching, you know, like the big thick stitching on denim. And he made jackets for all of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I have to get you one.
Yeah, sure.
They're incredible.
I'll take that. Sounds good.
Awesome. So if people want to see you on Twitter or Instagram.
Yep. Amber Lawrence Music is Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter is just Amber Lawrence. Amber, A-M-B-E-R.
Amber Lawrence.
Lawrence, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E. That's me.
Amber Lawrence, you're a beautiful creature. We love you. Love your music.
Thank you.
And so good to have you part of the Beach Sprint and Goldman family.
I know. Can't believe it. I'll race you.
Let's have a race.
I can't. I did a hammy yesterday at gymnastics, yeah. At adult gymnastics.
I did one in the city to surf as well. Oh, one more thing before you go. I forgot to ask you about the kids' album.
Yeah, yeah.
How'd that go?
Yeah, awesome. It was great. And doing another one, recording it in 2 weeks' time, doing a Christmas album coming out in November for December.
They say never work with children or animals.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am a child on the inside. I have no maturity. So it feels no different working with kids. But we did a video clip that had kids and animals in it. And that advice probably should have been adhered to.
You loved it? Love working with the kids?
Yeah, they're great. I love it. And I mean, my niece and nephew, I get to make them stars of my show all the time, and that's the best part for me. We're going on a cruise in October where they're part of my show, and we're in intensive rehearsals, 8-year-old and 6-year-old.
Really? Cool. What kind of cruise is that? Is that like
it's
a
called
family
cruising,
fun tour?
It's called Cruising Country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this year it's the family reunion theme, I guess. So Lee Kernaghan's coming with his sister Tanya, and John Williamson's coming with his daughter Amy, and then they said to me, do you have any family that can sing? And I went, yeah, my niece and nephew. So we've been rehearsing.
Oh, that's also where you do the Amber Lawrence show and you'll do the Amber Lawrence kids show as well.
No, I'll just do my show, but they'll come on as part of it.
Oh, as part of it.
Yeah, and
awesome.
Sing some songs, yeah.
How do you get along with John Williamson? You mentioned him just
then.
Yeah,
he's great.
He's a legend.
Yeah, I love his songs.
I went to the Middle East. I think you've done a couple of 2 to 4 shows as well. And I also went to, where did I go? The Solomon Islands.
All right.
And I went over there with John Williamson and we shared a room.
Oh, really?
And it was really bizarre sitting in a room watching John Williamson sitting there in his underpants, just tuning up his guitar.
I don't need the visual thing.
Going through his songs.
I don't believe that he tunes his guitar in his undies.
Well, actually, it was my guitar because I said, can I play a couple of my songs? And he's like,
and
oh,
so
shit.
So you both stripped down to your undies make sure you had no concealed weapons.
Well,
okay.
he just woke it up. But no, he's a top bloke. That was awesome. How did you like touring the Middle East and...
Yeah, amazing, amazing.
And working with the troops?
Just bucket list item, you know, just incredible. To be in Afghanistan, pinching yourself, going, how on earth am I standing in Afghanistan with a bulletproof vest on and a flak helmet? And
but when I did it, they gave me a bright blue bulletproof vest. Why does everyone else get camo?
I know.
And we have to wear a bright blue vest. If there's a little sniper, an Afghani Taliban sniper in the hills, he'd be able to spot me.
Yellow. They gave me yellow. No.
What?
No, that's not true.
So you went to Tarinkot and...
No, just Kabul.
Kabul,
Yeah.
That's in the international zone in Kabul.
Yeah.
Did you have any hairy moments?
No, we didn't. I mean, there was a high alert on base. You know, everyone was carrying loaded weapons. And so, you know, you felt on edge the whole time. We weren't allowed to go off and do our own thing. Mm. We had to be escorted at all times.
We
did feel a little bit like, you know, we're in a compound. We were in our Australia compound, which was like 10 by 10 metres. You know, we were locked down. And then we were only allowed out to eat. So... Mm. That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
and sing, of course.
But you're not allowed outside the actual compound.
Oh, no, you're definitely not allowed outside the big compound, but we weren't even allowed outside our Australia compound within.
It's crazy landing in the big Hercules, isn't it, when it circles down into Kabul.
I know.
And when we landed, we had all the Australian troops there picking us up in these bulletproof Land Rovers.
The Bushmasters.
And they were all freaking out. And we didn't leave the airport for like half an hour. And all of the Australian Army Band and all these other singers, like I was there with Doc Neeson as well. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And the guy driving my car, he came up to me and said, oh, we're leaving in a sec. He said, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but the Afghani president just landed at the same time as you did. And we didn't know. And he's the number one terrorist target in the world. So we have to change our route back to the international zone in Kabul.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Should I be worried? And he goes, yeah, because everyone's trying to get him. You should. So we're figuring things out. And he took me.
I can't believe they told you that.
This has happened so long ago. I reckon I can get away with saying this now. Yeah. But He took me behind his car, pulled out his gun,
yeah.
and he said, just in case anything happens, this is my gun. You can just pull it out of my holster. And if you're going to fire it, don't fire it away from the glass. Hold it up to the glass and it will puncture the glass. But
okay.
but if you fire it held back a bit, it'll bounce around the car.
Oh,
and, you
might...
and I'm like, are you really telling me this?
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Oh, man.
But we did get back there okay. But at the same time, the American convoy that was trailing the Afghani president, a roadside bomb, an IED went off, and an American troop died.
Oh,
it was
kidding.
The same way that we would have gone.
Oh, my God.
And we were told, you know, don't talk about this. And it's like, this is like 10 years later, so
wow.
I'm sure it's fine. But it
well,
is,
yeah.
it
no,
is
we
very
felt
hairy.
Safer than that. But, yeah, you know that you're at a risk, but they do look after you very well.
It's great to get over there and
yeah.
And help out the Australian troops
yeah,
and,
I mean,
and support them. I mean, if you agree with the war or whatever's going on, that doesn't have anything to do with it. You're there to support Australians who are doing a job
yeah.
and they're doing something that's a duty for their country.
Yeah.
And it really was an honour.
Give them a piece of home, which is, yeah. It'd be great to go back now and sing our backyard. I think they would
yeah.
pull at the heartstrings, I'm sure.
They blew up our microphones as well.
Really?
Yeah, so when we were in Iraq, we were in the in Saddam's palace in that area there.
Yeah.
And we'd gone to do a show and then they cancelled the show. I was on stage and this general came up on stage and said, are you going to tell everyone to clear out right now? And I'm like, are you kidding?
Wow.
I'm just about to introduce everyone to do a
yeah.
show. And he goes, you tell everyone to clear out right now or give me the microphone. I went, everyone, show's cancelled. We're going to clear out. Everyone's laughing at me. They thought it was part of the show.
Oh,
and I go, no, seriously. And this guy snatched a microphone off me and he goes, this is a 500 call. Everyone clear out of here right now. We've got an insurgent on camp. And I'm like, holy shit, this is really happening. So we've quickly packed everything up. Well, actually, I wasn't even supposed to pack everything up. I just thought, I'll stay and help.
Yep.
But everyone, all the other people got out of there. And I thought, I'm the only one left packing up.
Oh,
maybe
shit.
I should have left. So we've loaded everything onto this van and gone back to where we were staying in the dorm. It was probably about, I don't know, half a kilometer away. And one of the microphone bags dropped off the back of the van. And the American troops saw it and thought it might have been a bomb.
Oh,
and they blew up our microphones. We got the microphones
oh, no.
and all of the direct inputs, the DIs that
yeah.
you use for guitars and stuff were all melted.
Oh, my God.
So
wow,
funny.
You've got some good stories from that trip. Far out.
That was crazy.
Mine was not as hairy, thank God. Touch wood.
Thank you, Amber Lawrence, you beautiful thing.
Thank you.
You've been listening to On The Mic with Mike Goldman. Subscribe, download and review at iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher or your favourite podcasting app. For more, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. This has been another quality podcast production from Bytes.com.